The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hey everybody, this is episode number 30 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back after a week off.
Yeah.
Did you guys enjoy your break?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Katie, did you get that article I sent you about the bear that was roaming the halls of the high school in Bozeman?
Yeah, that happened today.
Okay.
No big.
No big.
Okay. Just a bear. Just Montana things.
There's been like a few bears that are just like hanging out in town, like the middle of our like downtown campus area. There's like a bear that's just been up in the tree, like watching over things. And apparently now one just like wandered in the high school and was like, "What's up, guys? I'm ready to learn." But he walked out of it on his own accord out of some other door once he like went down the hallway. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point now where whenever I see an article about an animal loose in Bozeman, and there are quite a few of them, I immediately think to myself, does Katie know this bear? Like, are they friends? Does she know this horse that's hanging out in Arby's? Like,
is it the famous bear that she operated on?
No, that one's safe and sound in his
pen. She's like, that's the other bear. This is
a black bear, not a grizzly bear.
Wow.
I need to learn my bears.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Important differences. Black bears usually just, like, eat berries and stick to themselves, and grizzly bears will, like, fuck your shit up, so. You don't want to be, like, face-to-face with a grizzly bear.
Okay, so if I were to see a bear coming down the hallway at work, I should check for the color of it, and if it's black, then I don't have to hide under my desk cowering in fear. I'm like, I'm okay. He just wants some berries.
Well, like, maybe cower a little bit, because he's still a bear, but less terrified than if it's a grizzly bear.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So, good to know. Woman of Excellence this week is a young lady named Holly Ann, who we met at GP Madison. She goes by the name The Vorlock online. She belongs to a group called Knights of the Epic Table, and they produce videos on YouTube. They do special videos, like they do box openings, they do Fat Pack Fridays, and something called Single Pack Sundays, which I believe is sort of like a crack-a-pack. She was super lovely. She had a t-shirt, which I loved, that said, "I only lose when I get mana screwed." Or I only get mad when I lose when I get mana screwed. I think that's what it said. But she was super lovely, and so you should support her. You can find her on Twitter at KOTET_Vorlock, VORLOCK. GP Madison was this past weekend. Hallie, Chris, and I were there. Mm-hmm. Hallie, you went to win it. Like, you'd practiced, you knew the set, mm-hmm. you were telling us about synergies that we didn't already know about. How did the event go for you?
Not as well as I anticipated, but it went okay. So I ended up dropping it X2-1, which was kind of unfortunate. This is a very slow format, and since it was the first week of competitive play with the new set, a lot of people weren't familiar with it, and a lot of people were playing slow. There were a lot of rounds going past the 15-minute overtime mark, so I ended up, unfortunately, drawing one of my matches with a young man who was playing in his first GP, but who was, you know, a very competent and pretty good player. So the pool that I had was, I guess, similar to a lot of pools that I've had in that the black and green cards just stood out to me right away. I had really good removal in black. I had Complete Disregard, Demon's Grasp, and Bone Splinters, which are pretty much the three best, the three good common removal spells in black. And I had a lot of tokens in green. I had Eyeless Watcher. I had Brood Monitor. That's the one that makes all the tokens. I just had a lot of ways to commit a lot of bodies to the board. And mm-hmm. in a format where people are trying to power out big Eldrazi, I really love to be the player who has gone so wide that by the time they resolve their Ulamog or their Void Winnower, I have so much presence on the board that they're just dead anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my approach to the format, and it fared pretty well for me. I have to say, I spent a lot more time in the last week cracking packs and building pools than I did actually playing games and practicing the format, which was probably to my detriment. And as I was telling Aaron, I ended up dropping because I lost to someone who had turn against, and that card is really difficult to play against. It's the 5-mana instant take a creature card. And there was a board state where I think if I had been more aggressive and I hadn't been so afraid of turn against, and I had just attacked with a bunch of my creatures, my opponent would have been forced to chump block and I would have had a much better board presence than he did. But because I was so afraid of turn against, I just kept attacking with this one large creature over and over again, and it didn't really get me anywhere because he just had chump blockers for days. And eventually he cast Planar Outburst and wiped all my creatures away, and it was kind of sad. But yeah, I regrouped afterwards and I realized that I really need to make every GP count, I guess. I went to this one just because, you know, Aaron and Chris were kind enough to offer me a place to stay and companionship, and I'm so glad that I got to come out and see you guys, and I got to see Wisconsin for the first time. I got to see a lot of people I really liked, but it was definitely not my finest hour, and I know in the future I've been talking about wanting to go on a tear and just wanting to go to more GPs, and I need to make sure I just put in the time to make them all count later on. Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the, I don't think they came up with the official name for it. Some people were calling it the Sydney Swap or the Sydney Shuffle, the new rule with the sealed pools.
Yeah, so I actually wrote an article that's going up on Gathering Magic any day now. I referred to it in the article as the Madison Maneuver. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that was the name for it, but I liked it a lot. I'm glad that I didn't have to worry about opening an expedition. I mean, I didn't open an expedition, but if I had, I probably would have been tempted to drop. But the procedure went along really well. Sean Catanese guided us through it masterfully, and there didn't seem to be any confusion about what was going on. The only possible complaint that I had about it was that the new procedure places a lot of emphasis on making sure all the cards came from the right place. You know, making sure that all the packs are stamped and all the packs have the standard number of commons and rares and everything in them. That's all great. Like, I like that. There was less time actually looking at the deck checklists where you register all those cards. Normally what happens under the old regime is that someone registers the deck, and then someone checks that the person registering it did the right thing, and then another person gets the pool and looks over it again and makes sure everything is correct. And now there's like one step removed from that, where that verification process doesn't happen and you just swap with the person across from you. And I think that could lead to more clerical errors, more game losses during deck checks. So I want to encourage people to be more vigilant about that. Like, if you're the one registering the deck, double check your work, make sure you're doing it right. And if you're the person getting the deck, double check the work that the person across from you has done and make sure that everything is correct before you try to figure out what you're playing from your pool.
That's good mm-hmm. advice. Mm-hmm. So Chris, you went into this with your as I'd lovingly call it, your YOLO face.
Yep. Oh yeah, it totally was.
You admitted that you were more excited to play in the side events than play modern. So how did your sealed event go?
It was okay. I had a lot of Eldrazi that I wanted to play with, and I was trying to follow Hallie's advice about staying in bug colors, because I thought that would be a good idea, because we had kind of had, like, pregame, like, pep talk. And then later when I showed my pool to Hallie, she's like, I would have done this. But it was just amazing to see her just, like, lay it all out and be like, yeah, you could have done this, this. And I'm like, whoa, holy shit, I had no idea. Because I had a lot of allies, and in retrospect, I probably would have played that instead.
She had a dozen allies, including the angel.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at Sealed, and even I know that's a good deal.
I was just like, I didn't even see it. I was just so focused on, like, shove these other colors aside, focus on these. So I didn't even really pay much attention, unfortunately. But I wanted to say, while we were, like, just coming off the topic, I definitely agree with Hallie about double-checking stuff, because I had the little sleep-in special, and I went to go sit down and put my deck together, and the person that had registered the deck had forgotten to write a card down. So when I went back, I put it on there to be like, oh, they didn't put this down at all. So, yes, definitely double check. But I didn't think, like, the deck was necessarily bad, but Allies just seemed very, very strong, like, every time that I played against it. And I was like, dang. And it would feel like I was so close to dropping my Desolation Twin, and then they would just, like, wreck my face off or something. So that was kind of sad. But it was nice to play in a Sealed event, like a big one. I haven't played in really any since, like, a couple PPTQ seasons, like, ago. I did some Sealed PPTQs. And some people, you know, they like to avoid them. But I still think, you know, something can be said for doing them, because everyone's kind of, like, on a more even playing field. Maybe some people got more practice than you did. But at the end of the day, they're still opening up, you know, cards just like you are. And maybe they got, you know, some bad pools. But I also think, on that same note, it's about what you get and what you do with it. You could probably have, like, a pile of poo, and you could make it, you know, just rock everyone's face off, even if you didn't have, like, good rares or just whatever. And I've seen it, so I can definitely say that for sure. But it was okay to play. I mostly wanted to, like, meet people and play in the side events and everything, so I'm glad I went for the main event and got the little swag bag and all that stuff, because it was definitely worth it. Because I can't say no to a nice bag, and I never met a playmat that I didn't like, so.
That bag was just busting with goodies, though. I was really jealous.
It was awesome. They gave us snacks.
The VIP bag?
Yeah,
they went all out. Like, they gave her granola bars.
Mm-hmm.
They gave her, what did they give you, like, sleeves and what else?
Sleeves, a deck box, a playmat. They gave us fruit snacks, granola bars, like, I think, like, a bag of chips, but they were, like, the baked Lays, so they weren't, like horrible, horrible chips, I guess. and
it's like a feast in a bag.
Yeah, I was when they said snacks, I was going to be like, we're going to have, like, some fucking, like, Snickers bar in here, and it's going to be, like, we're done. And I was like, wow, I'm like, this is, like, really cool. And I got sleeves that matched a deck box that I already owned, so I was like, oh, cool, well, now this matches, and you got your little voucher to play in a side event, which I didn't even use, hello. I found it the other day when
you
I was here.
Bum.
I know, it's like, I paid for my side event like a weirdo instead of using a voucher I had. But, and the bag was nice, and it was just, like, totally worth it. I was like, you know, When a TO definitely goes, like, that extra mile to make your quote-unquote, like, VIP experience, like, really cool, I think that says a lot about that tournament organizer. So I am going to be very sad if we do not see any Legion events ever again in the future. I'm hoping that maybe that will change, because I thought they ran a very good event. And that was the first one I had ever been to by them. So I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, at the start of the GP, there was, I think Steve Port even gave a little speech.
He did.
And there was some talk, just remembering, you know, how long Legion Games has been involved in competitive play. And it was very bittersweet, you know, and I think there was some commemorative, maybe like a, I think it was like a plaque, like a giant, collage even. I'm not really sure what it was, but some things were definitely given to him to thank him for a job well done. And it was nice. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a very well-run event, and I was coming to it from someone who had only played on the West Coast, so all of the events I had played in had been by Cascade Games and Channel Fireball, and I thought Legion just put on a really great show. I thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It did a really good job. I thought it was interesting. They had, like, everybody stand up, and they were like, if you were at the last GP Madison, sit down. If you were at these events, and you could kind of see, you know, what events different people had attended and how long they had been with Legion. But the one little thought I kept thinking in my head while they were doing that was, like, I wish they could have everybody stand up and be like, if you identify as female, stay standing. Because it would have been nice to see how many women were actually there. You know,
It felt like there were quite a few.
Yeah. And I thought that was awesome, you know, but sometimes I think, like, maybe we don't always think about it. Like, maybe we'll see, like, a girl out of the corner of our eye, but it would be nice to just, like, look around at a whole room full of women and be like, oh, hey, you know, there's that girl I saw earlier. Like, maybe we could talk about magic or something, or to know that you're, like, not alone, that whole thing. And I was thinking about that this afternoon. I'm like, that would have been really, really cool. I would have enjoyed that. But yeah, I did a modern side event while I was there. Aaron will tell you more about that later. But it was cool. The first guy that I played against, he was from Germany. And he was like, you know, do you know this card? Every time he showed it to me, I'm like, yep, I know that one. That one I'm not so sure of. Because, like, they were all in Japanese because, of course. But it was awesome.
So wait. He was German, but the cards were Japanese.
Yep.
Interesting.
Like you do. But yeah, even like the lands, the basic lands with, like, you know, the revised ones with, like, the white border, they're all in Japanese or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. And he was playing this, like, Hate Bears deck, but it had some cards that I don't ever remember seeing before, and I couldn't tell you what they were because, again, they were all in Japanese. But it was just, like, really good. Like, it was, like, a very, very powerful deck, and I was, like, really impressed. I'm like, dang, I'm like, I love your deck, like, this is really cool. And he just, like, proceeded to just wreck me, but we had, like, some really awesome games, and I hadn't seen Aven Mind Censor in, like, a million years, so I was just like, oh crap. And I kept on, like, forgetting, like, when I went to go search my deck for, like, my Tron lands, I could only look at the top four. I'm like, oh, that's so annoying, please have, like, a tower in there, that would be great. But we had some fun games together, and I said, oh, I said, you're here, like, do you still live in Germany? He is like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, did you come all the way out here for Justice Grand Prix? And he's like, no. He's like, I don't know why people from Europe would just come out here just for, like, a Grand Prix in, like, Madison, Wisconsin. I'm like, that is very true. But he's like, yeah, I'm out here for the Pro Tour. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And he's like, yeah. He's like, do you know Jeremy Dazzani? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, he's part of, like, my test group. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. No worries. I'm like, that's awesome. So we got to chat for a little bit, and I thought he was, like, really nice and fun and extremely good player, so I wished him well with the rest of his round, so that was really cool. And during all that, you know, people are coming up and being like, hey, you know, are you Chris? I'm like, huh? And they're like, sign my playmats, and, you know, just, like, good group of people in that side event. I had a lot of fun. The guy sitting, like, kitty quarter from me, I was mentioning to my opponent, trying to remember what his name is now, I feel so bad, but because he was from Germany, so I'm asking, like, do you have a Twitter? And he's just like, no, people don't really use, you know, Twitter a lot in Europe. They're not always tweeting about everything like in America. And I was like, oh, okay. And I started telling him about the show, and the guy kitty corner's like, the girlfriend bracket? I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, oh, my God. He's like, the app I have, like, advertises you guys. I'm like, what? This is a thing? I'm like, let me see this.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah. Deck Builder, like, apparently has, like, a thing for a bunch of different podcasts, and ours was one of them. So then he tells like, the guy that's going to the Pro Tour, he's like, she's internet famous. I'm like, oh. He's like, you're famous in US? And I was like, I guess. So that was kind of funny. But we had a good time in the side event. Aaron played in it, and so did Chris and myself, and we had a good time. I played this kid that was playing Living End. It was kind of confusing because I'm trying to, like, help him with his deck while I'm playing too, and I'm just like,
you have to stop doing that, lady.
But, like, I need to make sure that, like, he's, like, do, like, Hallie was watching me when I was playing.
He was kind of sloppy.
Yeah, so I'm like, what?
You know, he couldn't have been more than, like, 10 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the only reason why. So I was like, wait, I don't know if you can do that. This goes
like he tried to cast Violent Outburst, like, on her, like, during her draw step or something, and he was really unclear about, like, when he was casting it. And she also had, so the reason why he was casting Violent Outburst was because he was trying to cascade into Living End, but she had a chalice on zero.
Aww.
On the field, and the kid didn't know what that meant, and she was trying to explain to him, like, you probably don't want to do this because your Living End is just going to get countered.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
There was
it was a confusing situation.
There were just a few.
You know, it's I was going to chastise you for being too nice, but then I realized you did something really evil. You put a chalice on Zero, a poor 10-year-old boy, you monster.
He'll be
okay. Living in.
Hey.
He'll be.
Listen here, Bozeman.
You got to toughen him up early and be like, see that kid? It's Chalice of the Void. You don't want any part of that. It's where, like, bad kids go to hang out with Chalice of the Void. But otherwise, you know, it was fun, and we got to meet, like, a lot of cool people, and it was just really interesting for some of the people that were coming up, and they're like, you know, I'm socially awkward, or is it okay if I sit with you? It's like, don't kneel on the ground, come sit in the chair, like, you know, let's talk for a little bit. And I feel like everyone we met at the GP, I really wish I could have just been like, hey, why don't we go back to my house and, like, draft or something? Like, I just want to get to know you. You guys seem, like, really cool. So I just wanted to close out by saying, you know, thank you to Lonnie, Ariel, Addison, Tim, you know, thank you so much for coming, you know, up to me, like, specifically all of us, you know, talking to us, telling us how much you like the show, and you all seem like really great people, and hope to see you again. Don't be shy and come say hi.
Yeah, definitely. So I did not play in the main event because I am one of the people who avoid Sealed that Chris described. Sealed to me is kind of like a Rorschach test that I always fail. Like, you know, you put a pool in front of me and they're like, what do you see? And I'm like, I see a red, blue, white tempo deck. And they're like, no, it's a bug control deck. And I'm like, damn it. I just don't see what other people see. And I realize that. I realize that I don't have fun in Sealed events. And so I just don't put myself through that anymore. So Chris and Hallie were playing in the main event. I was waiting for the win a boxes to start. And while I was waiting for the win a boxes to start, I was re-sleeving my deck with these lovely Haruruya sleeves that Chris got me interested in. And a young man walked past me wearing a very colorful t-shirt that says, keep calm and ask your girlfriend how my dick tastes.
What?
Yeah.
That's classy.
I totally thought you were joking when you told me about it. I was like, for real?
Oh, no. Oh,
I
no.
did, too.
Oh, no. So I immediately called my friend Brogan over. Brogan is a fabulous level 2 judge. And I said, Brogan, there's this young man. He's wearing a very inappropriate shirt, and I'm not a prude. I'm game, but just not at a GP. Like, if you want to wear that in the basement with your friends and you're drafting, Godspeed. If you want to wear that to Arby's while you're getting a whatever they serve at Arby's, go for it. But just not at a GP. I saw plenty of kids there. I saw just people who didn't want to see that, and just I wasn't a fan of it. So they did end up tracking him down, and he was asked to turn his shirt inside out. So that was definitely a good thing. I also got to meet my BFF, Kai Buddha, who is a Hall of Famer from Germany. I queened out on him so hard. Like, I was talking to somebody else, and I thought I saw, like, from the back, but Kai didn't tell me he was going to Madison. Like, Kai and I talk, you know, we're cool. And so I'm kind of, like, creeping around him, and then Marshall Sutcliffe sees me creeping around and goes, yep, that's Kai. Blows my cover. So Kai turns around and
helpful.
Just being helpful. So Kai turns around and I immediately start squealing. I'm like, oh my God. And mind you, I just talked to him the other day on Skype. Like, we're not strangers. So Kai is just like, hello, very nice to meet you. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I don't queen out for very many people. Like, I've been in the game for a while. I know most of these guys. It's no big deal, but I totally lost it. And like, he's trying to talk to me and he's like, you know, so how is your event going? And I'm like, I'm just losing my mind, and I'm like 8 shades of red, and I immediately call Corbin over, Corbin from Brainstorm Brewery. He was working coverage, and I was like, Corbin, take our picture. And if you look at the picture, Kai looks like slightly terrified, because there was no prep time. It was like, come here, and I put my arm around him, and Kai's just like, oh, okay. And then we're posing for a picture, and it was lovely. Like, I was very happy to meet him. I'm a big fan of his, and he's my friend. Like, we do talk, and he's super lovely, so I hope that he does well at the Pro Tour. The only event that I really played in was the Modern Side event that Chris played in. I did play in a win-a-box, but I didn't win it or anything. I made it past my first match, and then I was knocked out of the elimination because it was single elim. But the Modern event that Chris and I played in, I did 4-0.
Yay!
Sweet.
I was playing Ad Nauseam. I beat Burn, Rug Delver, Blue-White Control, and Blue-Red Twin. And I can honestly say that all four of those young men had no idea what I was doing.
Really?
Not a clue. They had heard of ad nauseum, but like had never seen it go off. They didn't know what like part of the combo was. They all were like in a state of terrified. So like I would do something and they'd be like, okay, what happens now? And like there was just, there was just dread on all of their faces, and I completely lived for that. So I did beat them all. I felt really, really good. And, I am, because I feel so good about modern lately, I will be going to, SCG States with Chris on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, fun. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try to see if we can take down modern. And, I've been having a lot of fun playing modern. So I really want to keep that up. And I really enjoy the deck, and I feel like I'm getting really good at it. They were giving away points like the Legion events do. So I had enough points to buy myself a black hoodie, the hoodie with the black mana symbol.
Cool.
Which was super duper comfortable. And yeah, I had a really good time. I think to echo what Hallie and Chris said, you know, we got to meet a lot of listeners. You know, Autumn Burkett, who was one of our Women of Excellence, she was there. She came in 50th at the end of the weekend.
Nice.
Super lovely, super British. She'll be going to her first pro tour in Milwaukee. Addison was there. We signed cards. Our friend Tim was there. He had to sign and assemble the Legion. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just super lovely, and we were just showered in love. And it was just a really unexpected feeling, and it was just something I wish I could feel all the time, mm-hmm. really.
Cool.
Yeah. Another event that took place this weekend was SCG Atlanta. This was the second week of New Standard. And the top eight consisted of three copies of Green-White Megamorph, three copies of Jeskai Black, which sounds like a cologne to me.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that gets that feeling?
Oh, no, totally.
Black by Estee Lauder.
Right. I'm just imagining, like, you know, I'm imagining, like, Raph Levy in, like, a dark room with, like, some black and white, and it's, like, you know, Jeskai Black, and just very moody, and I could totally picture it. One copy of Jeskai Dragons, and then one copy of Bant Megamorph. And it seems like we've reached a point where it's literally a two-deck metagame. Like, that's the gauntlet you have to get through, is those two decks. Hallie, what do you think about that? That this is what we have right now.
I'm kind of bored. Not gonna lie. I've just been looking at the deck list every week and hoping that something catches my fancy. And I actually did see there was a deck that came in 12th place that I actually really liked. It was a Mardu Dragons deck. And I have played Mardu before. I played Mardu about a year ago when Butcher of the Horde was a thing. And this deck looks sweet. I really like Sarkhan and Kolaghan the Storm's Fury in a world where people are relying on planeswalkers like Gideon to sort of end the game. And, you know, the removal looks really good. This deck seems like it can gain enough life to outpace Mono Red, potentially, or Atarka Red, whatever the red deck is right now. So, yeah, I really like this, and that's probably what I'm going to take to FNM this week.
Mm-hmm. Now, Katie, you mentioned something earlier, I think it was the last time we recorded, that you were kind of getting your feet back into Standard. So when you see something like this, like, what do you think about this? Does this make you want to play Standard?
The whole top eight, so I did get to play FNM this last week. Wasn't
oh, cool.
Nearly as fun as GP Madison. but I played Green-White Megamorph, and it was kind of similar to Kibler's list from San Diego a while back. My friend Kobe just lent me the deck, and it was... I was actually surprised when I looked at the results of this, and I was like, oh, wow, it did well. And I didn't do horribly with it, but people in my area are, like, kind of making, like, these really big ramp decks into, like, Eldrazi, and Green-White can't really beat that. I did get, like, Ulamogged once or twice, and I was like, yep, there's just literally no card in my deck that does anything against this. So, I did like the deck other than that, but it just feels... I don't know, something about it didn't feel good in my hands, but... Mm-hmm. Obviously, in these people's hands, they did just fine with it. I am excited to get back into Standard, especially Oakland coming up. We're kind of starting to talk about plans with that in January, and I think over Christmas break, I'll have a lot of time to test. So I'm hoping that I can, you know, do well. I'm actually going to play that GP, so I'm excited.
Yeah, Katie, if you need a testing buddy, I would love that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I really like that I was playing these four colors a long time ago. you know, hipster as I am. But I really like Crackling Doom. This deck makes me excited. The fact that Jace is $80 does not make me excited, but I just need to make friends with more cards, so we will find a way. But yeah, I'm definitely excited to start testing out some stuff, and I'm hoping that the Pro Tour has some really cool and fun decks, and not just two decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris, what do you think about this?
I wasn't really so much interested in the decks that made like the top eight. I think it's cool that Jeskai is getting some more love than it used to, because it would kind of fade out and then people would be able to deal with it, and so no one was playing it. And now that they have like the black that they're splashing and everything, it seems to be making a stronger comeback. I don't usually run a lot of green decks. I haven't for a long time, but I could maybe be persuaded to do one of them. I have some Nissas. They need some use because my Great Aurora deck kind of fell apart. So I could maybe do that. But I really liked Aliantrazi's deck that he had, the five-color control deck. It looked like very interesting. It runs Siege Rhino, which I'm not quite sure how I feel about. But it's got, like, Catacomb Sifter, and, like, he's a boss. So I could maybe do that. I have been tossing around what I want to make for Standard. I feel like I don't know even where I want to, like, begin. Because it just feels like when you're, like, going to, like, a new place for the first time and, like, you don't have any friends and, like, you're trying to, like, find people that you know. And I feel like, well, I know some of these cards, but some of these cards, like, I'm not sure about. So I have to decide whether or not, like, we should hang out. So I'm just trying to, like,
going steady,
kind of like who do I want to make a commitment to? Like my commitment is already to Jace, and I have three, thank God. But that fourth is going to be like a pain to get.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I worked all this overtime. Hello, Jace. So we'll see. I would like to do some kind of like control element because it's control. You're fine, Katie. So maybe that would be something cool to throw together. I have the hanger bag walkers and all that other jazz, so I could probably throw this together pretty quickly, Ollie's deck list, or kind of brew something up. If I ever need like a good brew idea, I'll just be like, Christopher Preston, I would like to use these four cards. Tell me how I can make that work. And he'll be like, sure, give me like 5 minutes. He actually sent me a list the other day that I thought about putting together for Modern. I'm like, I can always count on you for this. So maybe I'll venture down the way with Standard. I'm having so much fun playing my Mono Blue Tron deck for Modern that kind of hard for me to like see anything else. I'll have to do some recon at FNM this week and see what all the kids are playing for Standard.
Yeah. I was interested in Esper Dragon, surprisingly enough. Like, I am so not... I haven't played a control deck since Innistrad rotated, and I was running some weird Esper control build with like Precinct Captain, Blood Baron of Viscopa, all that nonsense. But Caleb Durward from Channel Fireball posted a really neat Esper Dragons list. It actually does not include Jace, like by choice. He did have Jace in the sideboard, and then when I saw him at GP Madison, he was like, yeah, if I was playing that deck today, I wouldn't even put Jace in there. So you could build that deck without Jace, and that's something I would do. I didn't know that Flooded Strands were up to $25 a piece. And I polluted deltas are now $30 a piece. Luckily, I have those. I got those when those were only $10 each. And then the Esper Manlands are kind of pricey, too. So I'm just like, I'm just like, I don't know. I like the idea of Esper Dragons, but not necessarily enough to want to invest in it. Mm-hmm. I will say that one deck I do like a lot, I don't really know how good it is, but Saffron Olive from MTG Goldfish, who we're going to discuss a little later, he's been churning out these budget brews for Standard and Modern, and he made one today called Ulamog Exile. And it's black and white, or black-white colorless, because there's a lot of Devoid. And it has four Blight Herder, four Oblivion Sower, three Ulamog, and three Wasteland Strangler. And there's also cards like Silk Wrap, Stasis Snare. The theory being that you're using cards like Silk Wrap to exile creatures, and then using the Eldrazi processors to take those creatures and then get the effects. And then you have things like Grip of Desolation, where you can exile a creature and a land, Utter End, which can exile anything but a land. There's just a lot of exiling going on. Mm-hmm. And I really liked this. Like, it was a very cheap deck. I think it cost like $100, mm-hmm. maybe. And I would bring this to FNM. Like, I don't need an excuse to use Silk Wrap at all. Throw in, like, a Stasis Snare, I'm in. White and black are good colors for me. I would totally play this. So, like, if I had to come up with a deck at the last minute, I would totally play this, because this looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, play Silk Wrap, get rid of Jace.
Thank you. I'm seeing all of these decks are like, what are we going to do about Jace? And I'm like, play Silk Wrap? Like, hello? Like, Katie was, like, you know, discovering something before everybody else did. She's been rocking 4 and 5 colors forever. I've been using Silk Wrap forever. Like, sometimes you just got to take credit and be like, I saw it first. I think going into the Pro Tour, I would really love to see the Aristocrats. Like, I would love to see something along those lines break out. I would also just like to see a really refined control list. Patrick Dickman, actually, is not going to be at this Pro Tour, but he tweeted a Grixis list, which I really, really liked. It did have the 4 Jaces, of course, but it had a, you know, Draconic Roar, Murderous Cut, Dragonlord Silumgar, a Thunderbreak Regent. I would totally play that. I thought it looked really fun.
That sounds fun, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So there was, let's cut right into, while we're on the topic of Saffron Olive, he's been writing some really good articles mm-hmm. as well. Very talented. I'm so curious if that's his name. Like, if that's a screen name, like Saffron Olive. Like, that's an awesome name. Like, I hope that's his name. But so Saffron wrote a post the other day called Unfun, Unfair, and Punishing 8th Edition. And he was talking about how people have complained about 8th Edition for having powerful hate cards that see a lot of play in Modern. And he gave 3 examples. He gave Blood Moon, Ensnaring Bridge, and Choke. And gave what I thought were really well-thought-out arguments for why either these cards are okay or why they're completely unhealthy for the format. And the basic TLDR behind them is that, you know, Blood Moon is a healthy hate card because it punishes people for being greedy. You know, if you try to play 40 non-basics or 20 non-basics, girl, bye. You know, you shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. Ensnaring Bridge is kind of a borderline case where it punishes people who just want to play Magic, who just want to have creature combat, but you also have to make significant changes to your deck to be able to get the most out of it. Mm-hmm. And then Choke, he said, was completely unhealthy because it punishes you for just playing basic lands, which is something that everybody should be doing. Like, you shouldn't be punished just for following a very fundamental tenant of Magic. And I thought this was a really good article. Chris, what did you think about this? Did it, you know, make you think about certain cards? Did you see his point?
Oh, yeah. Like, it even kind of opened me up to, like, things maybe I hadn't really necessarily thought of before. Like, I agreed with him about Blood Moon, for sure. Because, I mean, if you do make some bad decisions with your land choices, like, you're probably going to get shut off from a lot of things. But usually they're not even sometimes maybe dropping it till the late game. And if you haven't gotten there, you're in trouble. So I thought that was very accurate. I have only been choked like twice that I can think of. And it wasn't like the worst thing ever, but I can see how it could be very oppressive to certain people. I believe he mentioned in the article that it kind of, you know, because it's going to target your basic lands for people that maybe they don't have a lot of money and they're just trying to get into Modern. If you're all running basics and, you know, and islands and stuff, that could be like a bad idea. And, you know, and I agree with him saying, you know, playing cards that punish you for like just playing the game. And I just thought it was interesting that he looked at the cards that he did. Some people have an issue with Ensnaring Bridge. I get what he's saying, where it's kind of like on the borderline there. I guess if you have a way to deal with Ensnaring Bridge, it's not a big deal. But if you're not running anything that can handle it, then it's going to be like a thorn in your side. A lot of Modern, at least from my experience, you know, it can be really like super creature heavy and like trying to like, you know, kill you right out of the gate with a bunch of stuff. And if you have an Ensnaring Bridge on the board, they're not going to be really able to do a lot of anything. But I don't think that it's like the worst thing in the world in comparison, if you're going to compare those 3 cards to each other. And I thought it was nice that he kind of just like addressed hate cards, unhealthy cards, whatever, in Modern, to kind of maybe give people a perspective that they hadn't had before. And, you know, maybe you had people that were running these cards and people were giving them like a lot of shit about it or something. They're like, oh, well, that's just a terrible card and blah, blah, blah. And maybe to see it from the other side, to be like, well, this person I played against gave me a lot of shit for playing Blood Moon. But, you know, it's really not bad. There's answers for it. It's not like there isn't any answers for it. You're not like totally just, you know, dead to it. Do I like it when it gets dropped against me, like when I'm playing Tron? Not particularly, but I mean, I still have my basics. There's still things that I can do, you know, to try to get rid of it. Or maybe by that point, maybe I don't even care about it. So it's all about them determining when to play it. And if you're playing a deck where, you know, you don't care about Blood Moon, they probably wouldn't even play it against you anyway. So I thought it was really nice that he did this article. I really enjoy his writing quite a bit, and I hope he does, you know, more things like that, where maybe he could go and do one for, like, cards that he felt were, like, oppressive. Granted, it's not an internal format, but, like, you know, standard, even, to be like, well, what do you think is, like, taking over standard right now and, like, is an issue, like, once we get more into it? Or even, you know, Legacy, to see what he would say about that. I think that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Hallie, how do you feel about hosers like these?
I mostly agreed with his points as well. I guess I didn't think about Choke as much as I maybe should have. It's not a card that has seen a lot of play in my local modern metagame, and it's not a card that I've ever played against, so I don't have that kind of gut reaction to it that a lot of people have to certain hate cards. But, you know, he made the point that, you know, it just punishes people for playing a color, one of the five colors that we like to play, and it's a great point that, you know, we shouldn't punish people for playing blue. I don't think that, you know, if something like Choke is available, there should be an equally powerful card that hoses every other color, or it should just be equal. But I guess I'm in the minority in that I actually like Blood Moon a lot. I'm glad that it's legal in Modern. I think it's one of the cards that makes the format so challenging and skill testing and diverse. And I like to be playing decks that, you know, either don't care about Blood Moon or that can easily get around it. So I think it's just a good barometer for the format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Katie, what do you think?
I disagree.
Speak on it, girl.
So Hallie said, like, Choke punishes you for playing a certain color. Well, Blood Moon punishes you for playing, like, four of the five colors. I thought that his arguments were really, like, well thought out. I just didn't quite agree with some of them. And I don't have any experience against Choke. I've never had it played against me. I've never seen somebody play it. I can imagine that it would just cut me real deep in my heart area. and same with Ensnaring Bridge. I haven't played against it as much as I feel like I should have at this point, but with Montana's meta, it's kind of, you know, sometimes feels a bit stale. But with Blood Moon, I really feel like if you want to play basic lands, like, you know, play mono red or play, like, sealed, I feel like, you know, they print multicolored lands for a reason. They're meant to be played and they're meant to shine. And I just want to let them shine. And I don't think it's healthy that every time I pick a deck to play that I have to think about Blood Moon. Like, I feel like if you're thinking about one card every time that you make a deck choice, like, am I going to lose to Blood Moon? Then, I don't know. That, to me, seems like an unhealthy card to have in the format. And obviously you take into consideration things, but, you know, like, can this deck stand up well against mono red? Can this deck beat a deck like Ad Nauseam? Stuff like that. But when it's always about one card in the mono red deck, like, if mono red didn't have Blood Moon, my matchup against it would be, like, 1,000 times better, you know? I did agree that when he said that it is skill testing and that you have to fetch your lands correctly, I did like that, and I do like when you can, you know, whether it's you or another player is fetching their lands very thoughtfully and you can see it play out and how well it turns out. But on a whole, I'm really not a fan of Blood Moon in the meta.
Well, I think Saffron brought up a really good point. You know, not only did he try to, you know, explain you know, how the cards are in Modern, he also tried to tie them to other formats. So he brought up Legacy, for example, and that in Legacy, it's, you know, Mana Denial is so much easier than it is in Modern. In Modern, you know, all we have is Ghost Quarter, but they still get a land for their trouble. They can still get a basic land for that. We also have Tectonic Edge, but the opponent has to have at least four lands in play. So, you know, if you have a deck like Tron or you have a deck like Amulet, you can't do anything before turn four. And even then, I've had decks like Tron and Amulet still win with a Fulminator Mage or with a Tectonic Edge. That's not a guarantee that you're going to stop them. Whereas in Legacy, you can play a turn one Wasteland. I've had it happen to me. Rug Delver, that's their whole strategy between Stifle.
I have played many turn one Wastelands.
You know, but that's their whole strategy is to, with Wasteland and Stifle, just basically stop you from doing what you want to do. And, you know, Deathrite Shaman, you know, part of the reason that Deathrite Shaman can be legal in Legacy is because if you were to do a turn two Liliana, you've got Force of Will that can sort of keep you in check. And in Modern, if somebody wants to go crazy with their lands, there are very few options to stop them from doing that. So I think in Modern, Blood Moon is something we need. I don't think in Legacy it's so necessary because they have better tools. But in Modern, if we didn't have that, you know, I think Tron would run rampant. I think Jund would be, you know, Jund doesn't really run many basics either. I think it just sort of keeps the format fair in that regard. So I relate to him when he uses that argument.
Yeah. Do you feel like Mana Denial? I mean, he talks a lot about people getting to play Magic, and I don't feel like any Mana Denial strategy lets the people play Magic, I guess. I mean, obviously it is a tactic that people take in different formats, but I don't feel like... I mean, he talks about new players having fun and them just getting to play Magic the way they want to play Magic when it comes to, like, choke or whatever. But I feel like if you can't cast your spells, you're not playing Magic. Like, I feel like
that's
Choke
true.
And Blood Moon are identical, and he makes different cases for them, mm-hmm. I guess.
Well, I think part of, I know what he, something else he mentioned in terms of Choke is that there's really no downside for you to play Choke. You know, like if you're playing Ensnaring Bridge, you have to play a deck that you can be hellbent. You know, you don't want to have any cards in your hand. So something like 8-Rack is going to use Ensnaring Bridge, but, or something like Burn is going to use Ensnaring Bridge. But, you know, Splinter Twin isn't going to run it. Escape Shift isn't going to run it. You know, you have to have a certain deck to accommodate that card. Mm-hmm. If you play a card like Blood Moon, you're feeling that effect too. You know, it's affecting you too. A deck like Affinity will sometimes say, fuck it, I will turn off my Ink Moth Nexus if it means that you don't get to have an Urza's Tower. You know, they're willing to make that sacrifice. But I played Choke in Living End, and I played it in Deathcloud for a little bit too. And for somebody playing green, it only requires one green. And if you're not playing blue, you don't have any downside to using it. It purely screws over the other player, and in a very permanent fashion too. So I think that's why I think Choke is so much worse, is because the opportunity cost is so high. There's no downside. It's just like, I get to do this thing and I'm cool. mm-hmm. I will say his post inspired me to think about a card that I personally don't enjoy. I am somebody who likes graveyard decks, and Rest in Peace is the bane of my existence. And it really got me thinking about whether or not it's as bad as I like to think it is. You know, like, I tend to have a very fuck Rest in Peace kind of attitude. And looking at his criteria, I'm still wondering, you know, does it really have a place? You know, like, is it something that I should just sort of deal with and that, you know, it's good for the game? Or am I just biased and saying, well, it makes my life hard, so we should get rid of it? But I've definitely had thoughts about Rest in Peace being too powerful, and what were they thinking? And I haven't quite decided yet how I feel about that.
Do you think boggles are good for the game? Because I really fucking don't.
Oh, man. I don't think we have enough time to discuss that one. But if our listeners want to share their opinions, they can certainly tweet us or email us how they feel about that.
Yes, I'd be curious.
Last but not least, the week that we took a break, we were featured on a website called Gadget, which is about women in tech, and they cover things like culture and gaming and style and things like that. And one of them emailed me to ask about the show, and we were featured in an article called Meet the Women of Magic the Gathering, along with our friend Tifa Robles and the Lady Planeswalker Society. Did you all get a chance to read it? I thought we were represented pretty well in there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
It was very well done. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. I wanted to, like, share it with everyone, be like, read about my podcast, read about LPS. Like, this is really cool. Like, I thought it was very well written, and I really liked the things that you and Tifa said, Aaron. Like, I thought it was, it really made us look enticing and, you know, friendly and nice and just like, come join us. We want you to join us type of thing.
Yeah. I was really happy that she wanted to, you know, when Sammy was the young lady who wrote the article, you know, when she interviewed me, she was very clear that she wanted it to be a positive article. She wasn't looking to say, you know, the men of magic suck and this is why. It wasn't like that at all. It was purely, here are some women. And it wasn't an exhaustive list, you know, because clearly there are plenty of women who are doing good work in the community. But it was to say, you know, magic has come a long way. Magic is continuing to make progress. Here are some of the people who are helping make that possible. And I like that it was positive, because she could have very easily made it a bash piece, and she was very adamant that, you know, she didn't want to go there, and I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I do feel like things are changing. Like, it seems like every tournament I go to, I like think to myself, like, wow, there's a lot of women here for this tournament. But it just keeps happening, so it's probably gonna be like the normal, but I always think it's not normal. Like, we had a tiny FNM on Friday. We had only 9 people. I don't know where everybody was, but 3 of us were women, and somebody at the end was like, I played all females tonight, and it was great. Because at the end of the 4 rounds, like, every opponent had been one of us. So, yeah, I do think that the trend is continuing, and it seems like it's really going places, which is great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Listener question. Send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We received quite a few since our last, we put out the call for more questions. So thank you to our listeners for helping us out there. And this question comes to us from Aberdeenshire, Northeast Scotland. Scotland.
Yes.
Going forward, if you all have accents, just like send us an audio bite with your question. We'd really like to hear that. Or is that just me?
No, I would like to hear all the accents.
You'd like to hear that? Okay, just making sure. Just making sure. Because we'd love to hear your accents. So this is from a young man named Alec Roberts, who we met in Vegas. And he says, hello, girlfriend bracket. Why did I start off being Scottish? I shouldn't have done that. Hello, girlfriend bracket. That was bad. That was a Caribbean. Whew. Sorry. Hello, girlfriend bracket. I had the pleasure of meeting some of you in Las Vegas this year and have been an avid listener since. The Innistrad draft hosted by Heather was really fun, and I was very happy to get my damnation signed. Woo, damnation! Hopefully when I'm in the U.S. again, I can meet some of you for the first time or see you again. My question is related to meeting more female members of the Magic community. On Monday, I broke up with my girlfriend of 6 weeks as we both agreed that we didn't have much in common. I'm very passionate about my hobbies and try to build my life around getting the most enjoyment from them, from my free time, and she had no desire to join me. Given the opportunity to, I want to find someone who is as into their hobbies as I am and to find some level that we can connect on. However, where I live, the Magic community is few and far between, and female players seem to be rarer than Expedition lands. What would be your advice on meeting women in the Magic community and or introducing women with similar interests to the game? Please be brutally honest with me. Sincerely, Alec.
Okay, I guess I'll be the first to be brutally honest. I think it's great, first of all, that he wants to find someone with similar interests, because this is something we've come back to over and over again, that, you know, relationships are built on, you know, commonalities, and, you know, finding someone who games when your whole life revolves around Magic can be important to a lot of people. I know it's important to me that, you know, my partner is involved in Magic and games also, but I don't know that I would be dead set on finding a partner who plays Magic, because there are so many ways in which people can be compatible with one another, and I think if you go into Magic tournaments with the objective of just, like, finding someone to date, I think you're going about it the wrong way. I think if you try to be sort of, like, passively open to the opportunity of meeting someone, and that person happens to have something in common with you, that's great ground to stand on. But I know that, when I first started playing Magic and I was, you know, new to my community, I know I met some guys in my community that I wasn't compatible with, who, you know, I went on one date with someone and we realized that, you know, even though we both liked Magic, we weren't compatible in other ways. And I think that could be a common experience. So, I mean, the idea of introducing someone to magic who you already have a rapport with, you already have a relationship with, I think is great, especially if there's someone who is into most of the same things that you are and you think they would really gravitate to magic. But I think I'm going to go back to the passively open opportunity thing. I think that's the best way to go about it.
I'd agree. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people like who play magic and they play it competitively and they play it a lot whose significant others are not involved in the game. And while it is good to have some common ground, I agree with Hallie that if you go into it looking for, you know, the one female in your community and you want them to date you, it's awkward for them and it might not go very well. I think inviting someone to come play the game with you is a good alternative, like he said in his email. But with anything, you know, including magic, you can't force them to like it. Like, there's been a lot of, you know, people that I've hung out with, and they're like, oh, well, I tried to get my girlfriend to play, but she just didn't like it. And, you know, you can't force it too much. And while having similar interests is good, the passively open thing is much better, I think. Just waiting for it to happen, because I've had two relationships that have come up through magic, and they've been great, but I've had relationships that have not been magic involved and they've been, you know, fine as well. So it's definitely a balance, and I think it's something that's desirable to have a woman in your life that's involved in magic, but I don't think it always is as perfect as everybody thinks it is.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that for sure. You know, it's good to be with someone that has similar interests, or at least like understands and respects your interest. Because you could definitely date someone that, you know, maybe magic, gaming, all that stuff isn't their thing, but you do have other things in common. But try not to let, you know, someone make you feel bad about your interests or something. You should definitely, if you like magic, that's your thing. And hopefully you can find someone that will definitely be supportive of that. I will say that I do think that people that if they're already like into gaming and other things, they could be more receptive to learning how to play magic. So if someone, you know, comes into your local game store, you and they're already like into whatever and you get to know them and, you know, maybe something happens, you know, you could teach them to play magic if they don't, you know, anything about it. And if they decide they like it, great. And if they don't, you know, at least you tried. And hopefully, like I said, they'll be respectful of the fact that, you know, you like to play magic, you like to go to tournaments, do whatever you like to do magic-wise, and I think that that is definitely really important. Meeting someone at a tournament, like we've talked about before, that could be kind of like an awkward situation, but I think if, like, you've seen someone enough times, you know, you've had good conversations with them, later on down the line, you could always, like, see what's going on, you know, with them, but that's kind of like a weird situation. I don't know like what I would do if some guy like tried to pick me up at a magic tournament and be like, really, we're here? I just want to play magic. Like, I don't know. So I guess it would be like a fun story later to like tell your grandkids or something. Be like, your grandma and I met at this magic event in 2001 or something. Be like, wow. So, you know, just kind of, you know, tread the waters. And like I said, if you don't find someone that's into magic, at least, like I said, have them be respectful of your interests, and maybe you guys will have things, you know, in common in other ways. Maybe you'll like to cook, or you like to go canoeing, or you find something that kind of brings you together on another level, just maybe not magically.
Yeah, something about the email kind of struck me as odd or like contradictory. So on the one hand, Alec, you say, I'm very passionate about my hobbies and try to construct my life around getting the most enjoyment from my free time, while she had no desire to join me. But then I want to find someone who's as into their hobbies as I am. Well, maybe she was into her hobbies, but she wasn't into your hobby. Where that kind of struck me as odd, where it sounds like the bottom line is you want someone who likes what you like. And that's fine, but it just was interesting to me. You know, at first it sounded like she had no hobbies, and then it later turned into, but it wasn't my hobby. And, you know, I'm happy dating somebody that's just in the geek continuum. You know, like if you're a coder, like you're into Ruby Rails and all that stuff, godspeed. You know, I'm not, but you are. And as long as you geek over something, I'm cool with that. You know, if you like to play, you know, Counter-Strike, that's cool. I don't play Counter-Strike, but as long as you occupy like some sort of Venn diagram, and as long as your two circles, you know, meet in like the geek middle, I'm okay with that. And, you know, we talked about this over dinner the other night, you know, about how, you know, you can be in a relationship and still have your own hobbies, your own time. You know, you don't have to be one of those couples that does everything mm-hmm. together. You know, you can spend 4 hours away from your guy or your girl and you're fine. And they can be doing something that you have absolutely no interest in, and that's fine. And, you know, it sounds like there just needs to be a little bit more, you know, maybe definition on your part, Alec, of what you're really looking for. You know, like, do you really want somebody who's into their hobbies, or do you really want somebody who's into your hobby? And if so, why is that? You know, like, why do they have to like exactly what you like? Because, you know, I think I'd want somebody who has some different interests. You know, I get tired of talking about magic, actually, you know, mm-hmm. and it would be nice to come home from F&M and not have to hear their F&M stories too, you know, just be able to say mine and have him be like, oh, well, you know, I played Mad Libs with some friends. And it's like, oh, well, tell me about Mad Libs, please. Like, I just don't want to hear anything about Colorless Mana or Grafdigger's Cages. Like, talk about anything other than magic. And I think that can be really refreshing, you know, to not have, you know, to not live in this echo chamber where all you talk about is that one hobby. So I do think it is possible to meet women in the community. I think, like Chris said, tournaments are probably a bad scene, but if it's somebody that you know from your local game store and you have like a rapport with them and you've developed like a casual relationship with them, I think there's nothing wrong with being like, you know what, you want to go get an icy after this? Like, I think that's fine. I think that can be, again, if you're not doing, as long as that's not your sole reason for going to F&M and your sole reason for going to your local game store, I think that's totally a possibility. But I think the bottom line is just, you know, there's nothing wrong with dating a girl who's just geeky. I don't think that you need to limit your options even more by insisting that she be into magic too.
Yeah, and it's surprising if you hang out in your local game store on other days, like, other people go into your local game store. Like,
yeah.
You know, you sometimes you don't think about it because, you know, you go to F&M, you see the same people, and you go home and you're like, that's my local game store crew. But yes. When I was like working in my game store, I'd be in there on like Thursdays for like 6 hours during the day, and all these people would come in and buy magic cards, and I'd be like, who are you? Like, where did you come from? You buy magic cards? That's cool. Like, I'm Katie. And they'd be like, I had no idea who you are. Like, no, I'm here like all the time. It's amazing. We don't know each other. But, you know, or even if you go hang out with like your Netrunner group or your, you know, board game night group or whatever, yeah. There's a ton of different people in different avenues that you could probably also, you know, become friends with, and maybe more after you get to know them, like through other avenues in your local game store. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you brought up a really good point. You know, there are so many things that happen in our local game store that, you know, going back to the echo chamber thing, we forget about because it's all magic all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with us doing the show, you know, we're reading articles, we are playing, we are doing the show, we are streaming. You know, magic is 24/7 for us. And sometimes we forget that there's, you know, X-Wing figurine miniatures happening, and, you know, Malifaux is on Tuesday night, or, you know, this Force of Will game is on Thursdays. And, you know, just going to, just seeing what else your local game store has available and going, wow, there are other things other than magic, you know, and maybe you can meet people that way too. And just, it feels like there's a general, you know, feeling of limiting yourself in Alec's situation, and just kind of, you know, opening yourself up to new experiences could really help you mm-hmm. meet someone. Mm-hmm. So anything else that we wanted to talk about before we wrap up the show?
I have a quick announcement.
Okay.
So our friends Mike and Tifa Robles of the Lady Planeswalker Society are hosting a charity event this weekend that I'm participating in. It's called Rock Band for Charity, because Rock Band 4 recently came out. They're going to be doing a 24-hour stream of people playing Rock Band on this Saturday. I think it's starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday and going until 9 a.m. on Sunday. That's Pacific time. And so if you tune in between 1 and 9 p.m., you may see me singing some Rock Band songs. So that's 1 to 9 p.m. Pacific time, and the Pro Tour is going on in Milwaukee, so we'll be a couple hours behind. So when you're done watching the Pro Tour, you can always go to twitch.tv/MikeandTifa, and you can find us there. I will post some things on Twitter about it. There are some more details. There's a website where you can go and donate money because all the money is going to charity. And you can choose songs that we sing. You can choose band members. Wow. It's a lot of fun. And there are some cool rewards too. We're going to be auctioning off a Lady Planeswalker Society playmat, among other things. And there's some great incentives for chipping in and helping the cause.
Chris has her PayPal already open, waiting to hit submit.
It's kind of true.
Chris would be that woman that you see at, like, you know, if you go to, like, a pancake breakfast, you go to, like, you know, one of your local little gatherings and they have, like, the tickets you can buy to, like, win something. Mm-hmm. Chris would be the lady that buys, like, 100 tickets. You know, most of us buy, like, most of us, if we go to, like, you know, my parents, I was raised in a small town, and every July we go to the firefighters at the firehouse. They have a spaghetti dinner, and then they'll have, like, a little raffle where you can win, like, new bowling shoes or something small town, you know, and usually we'll buy like 2 tickets, you know. Chris is the one that hands him a 20. Like, I'll take $20 worth of tickets.
I totally would. Guilty as charged.
I have to say, Hallie, I cannot listen to Uptown Funk without thinking of you. I don't even want to hear it. Like, it was on my working out playlist, and I was walking home from work, and just as it was starting, I heard the do, and I was like, nope. If it's not Hallie's version, I don't want it. So I turned it off, and you've ruined me in a good way from Uptown Funk.
Mm-hmm. Aw, thank you.
I had the same thought today at the blood drive. I'm like, ooh, it's the blood drive special. I'm like, I remember when Hallie says this. Oh my god, I'm having all the feelings.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to this episode of the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. And you can read my articles here on Gathering Magic. I have a new one coming up soon. And there will be more where that came from.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or by email, katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is TEHKRIZ. That's to Chris. My username for Tumblr is also to Chris. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ. That's yotochris@gmail.com. And you can find me on Snapchat, Cryptic Command with K's. I've been getting some sweet pics from you guys, so keep sending them.
Cool. I have to get on Snapchat.
That's what all the kids are doing. So I'm like trying to keep up with like the generation. Some kids like, do you mind if I send a Snapchat today of you like taking me to the nurse's office like in the wheelchair from this blood drive? I'm like, you do what you got to do, man. He's like, you want to say hi? I'm like, sure. So I'm like waving. It's too funny.
I still have to upload pictures to my Instagram from SCG Milwaukee. Like, that's how bad I am at this.
Me too.
I always snap Chris like right at the end of the show when she's like, this is my Snapchat thing, and then I take a picture of myself like with my headset on, and I always have like this big goofy grin, and I send it to her every week that we record.
She just did.
I love it. Don't I look
that's cute? So meta. You always look cute.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye!